Well, welcome back. Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. I am Seth Liebson. Mr. Bill, good to see you. Young David, good to see you. Terry, good to see you, Miss Terry. 602-508-0960 for anyone who would like to call in and join. I'm a little tongue-tied because I am a little, I'm just overwhelmed. Our dear friend and often guest, Ann Atkinson, stopped by. Unannounced, an unannounced visitor, as Rain Man might put it, and she brought us T-shirts. She brought young David and me a T-shirt that she had made up for us that says, "Don't immanentize the eschaton." Now, what's so great about this is it's a mouthful, but God love her. So we were talking with her about Young Americans for Freedom and the William Buckley documentary. I'm becoming a little bit like Don Imus with the Whitaker Chambers book, aren't I, on the Buckley documentary. I can't stop talking about it. And we were talking about it, and I said, well, one, I hope they get into the bumper sticker for Young Americans for Freedom, the slogan of which Bill Buckley popularized. By popularized, I mean, I don't know, 10,000 people knew it or something. But it's "Don't immanentize the eschaton." And son of a gun, the Bader-Meinhof effect takes place. Because I'm driving that afternoon on Lincoln, and I see a car with a bumper sticker that says, "Don't immanentize the eschaton," that I sent to young David and Ann. So Ann, God love her and God bless her, she came by with this beautiful T-shirt that say, "Don't immanentize the eschaton." So young David and I can wear them about town, and you'll know it's young David or I, because I'm betting, aside from the lovely Ann Atkinson, that no one else has these. They're wonderful. All right. Our graver business frowns on this levity, as Shakespeare put it. And I want to talk about something. Actually, it's related to Anne. And Mr. Bill gave me this idea. But the NPR reporter who's been getting so much attention, Uri Berliner, he's been with NPR for decades, National Public Radio. And he wrote a piece in the Free Press, Barry Weiss's outlet, talking about the bias at NPR and how NPR used to be less biased. And kind of as a public entity, which it is, National Public, it's under the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, exclusively paid for by the United States. Not exclusively, but singularly paid for. Not singularly, primarily paid for by your tax dollars, over $500 million a year to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You would think that it would be something other than a singular left-wing biased outlet. Uri Berliner, himself a liberal, he is no Republican, he is no conservative. He writes this piece about it and how editors and other reporters just didn't want to do certain stories at NPR. Like, for example, they didn't think the Hunter Biden laptop story was a good idea because it would harm the election. Not because it was unverified, but because it would tilt the election, and it was off. Anyway, he gets suspended for writing this piece in the Free Press. Now, ironically, we should just pause right there, because any time there is an issue of censorship or the government coming in to ask reporters about their confidential informants, if they're releasing classified information, anytime a press person is kept from an event, they will wrap themselves in the First Amendment. They will wrap themselves so tight in the First Amendment, claiming their absolute right to do whatever it is they want to do on behalf of free speech and free press and free inquiry. But the moment one of their own challengeth his own house, like Uri Berliner, even when he's on the same sheet of music politically, they suspend him. They suspended him for his speech, for writing an essay in a publication. They suspended him for that at National Public Radio. When they say we're anti-First Amendment, that we're taking away civil liberties, that we don't understand the Bill of Rights, I just understand when they say, what kind of First Amendment would you uphold were you to take power? We'll do better than NPR. That's a good answer. We'll do better than NPR. Will do better than the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which your tax dollars endow. Anyway, so Uri gets suspended, and today he resigned. And he was suspended by Catherine Marr. Catherine Marr is the new CEO at National Public Radio. And God bless Chris Rufo, who's uniquely wonderful at hunting down things people in high places said that maybe they shouldn't have said when they, anyway, didn't think it mattered. But, you know, you can't hide from things you say in things like a TED Talk. She said this in a TED Talk. So, you know, the idea that, well, you know, you're dredging up things that a year ago, this is Catherine Marr at TED. Okay, this is the CEO of National Public Radio, and this is what you're getting from National Public Radio. This is the CEO, okay? And by the way, when you have a CEO of a broadcasting corporation or radio network or, you know, an editor or an editor-in-chief or executive editor at a newspaper or the producers at news on cable and television news, understand they're like a school principal. They kind of set the tone and temperature. They kind of you're playing to them. You're playing to their vision and their view because they answer to, listen to Catherine Marr at TED.
The hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion. Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start.
Seeking the truth for a journalist is not the right place to start. Let that sink in for a moment. Saying the quiet part out loud, are you? Seeking the truth might not be the right place to start. It's the president of NPR, CEO of NPR.
In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction.
Our reverence for the truth might be a distraction.
That's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done.
It gets in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. Now, you know what that means. You know what that's blather for. It's getting in the way of our agenda. The truth can stop our agenda. For example, the Hunter Biden laptop. It's a great example. Why should we report on this when it's going to help reelect Donald J. Trump? The truth is a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. This from the head of a major broadcasting corporation. Dedicated to the news, by the way. Dedicated to the news. I was telling a colleague of mine in here earlier today. I play a little game with another friend of mine on Saturdays I run with. And the game is when we tune on to NPR on the way to meet, how long will it take until the story is about something with an LGBTQ angle? Usually 30 seconds. Usually 30 seconds. Sometimes we see if we can get under 30 before NPR goes to the LGBTQ part of the story, or is the story. Anyway, I have more to say about this and the importance of the truth contra NPR, contra Catherine Marr, contra the relativistic age we live in. Let me, as I go to break, put in a word for our sponsors at YRefi. YRefi has a great investment. It's a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where they invest in you. You can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back with YRefi. And, of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises with YRefi. But best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Or call them at 888-YREFI-24. Call me at 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show, 602-508-0960. Catherine Marr, the CEO of NPR, giving her TED Talk speech where she's saying truth is not the greatest place to start in journalism. Our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. How is truth, by the way, just take that piece apart for a moment. How do you get to common ground if there's no truth? If truth is not, how do you build a commonality around something if you're not all in agreement on what that thing is? How can you have common, how can I have common ground about a discussion of a table or anything if Mr. Bill's truth about a table is a chair and my truth about a table is a table? That's the magic, Harry Jaffa said. Professor Harry Jaffa said, the magic of the common noun in our language, the Aristotelian point that we humans, separate from other animals in our ability to reason with the use of language, which gives us the miracle of the common noun. Should I give that class of Harry Jaffa's on the miracle of the common noun? Maybe I need to. Maybe I need to do that. Human speech about an object presupposes that we employ common nouns. To say, for example, that what I'm sitting at is a table or desk implies that there is an infinite number of possible tables or desks, each different from the one I'm sitting at, and yet they were all equally tables and desks. They are not, say, chairs or elephants. The mind has abstracted the idea of the table and desk from the visible forms of particular ones, just as the eye abstracts the visible forms from their matter. Test me. When I said table or desk, you folks in the audience knew what I was talking about, right? Yet you all probably had a vision of some different kind of table or desk from one another. But we all know what I was meaning in saying the words table and desk. This applies to humans as well. Another noun we can abstract. Only when we see that there is an infinite variety of possible human beings, each equally human, do we begin to understand the difference between the human and the non-human. There's no particular color, for example, that makes a chair, a table, a desk, or a human, unless you distort and change what it means to be a human, which is a Herculean task requiring a massive change of not only all history, but every dictionary that was ever written. So Catherine Marr understands none of this or wants to radically change it because she believes in journalism in something called my truth, which means no truth. Listen.
That is not to say that the truth doesn't exist, nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths.
Like, for example, perhaps not all men are created equal. That would be a different truth. One might want to ask her, is it self-evident to her that all men are created equal? We hold these truths to be self-evident. She obviously thinks there are many different truths, so maybe some people shouldn't. I bet you she believes in civil rights. Can someone, do you think, ask her why? Why does she believe in civil rights if she doesn't believe in the truth that humans are equal inherently, endemically, equal? She won't be able to answer that question because she's in the world of Kamala Harris gobbledygook. Mush thinking. What William Buckley called junk thought. That's the word for this. Junk thought.
And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you.
The truth for you.
Probably for the person sitting next to you.
And different from the person.
But this may not be the same truth.
Yeah. So let's stop calling it truth, maybe, if it's all different. Why don't we come up with a new word for it? What could that be? Let's see. Will? Could we call it the triumph of the will? Maybe we could call it the triumph of the will. Or maybe we could just call it melancholy baby. I don't know, but it's not the truth if everyone's truth is different. It's not the truth if I say young David is a boy, and someone else says, well, my truth is that young David is a scorpion. Oh, okay. We have children that we coddle in classrooms that want to be things other than human beings. You know this? They dress up like cats and dogs, and teachers are kind of encouraged to coddle that and let them do that because they deny they're a human being. We have humans who think they are leaves. Are you aware of that? The leaves need a lobby for their cultural appropriation, misappropriation. The leaves need a better lobby. Trees. There's now a movement for tree equity. It's written into federal law in Biden-sponsored legislation. Did you know that trees have a cause and a claim for equity now? Tree equity. I'm being a little silly on that one point. It's really not about the trees being angry that they're not being treated equal. It's that neighborhoods are claiming that they're being discriminated against because they don't have enough trees. So we have to encourage tree equity in certain neighborhoods. I don't know why we should impose our will, nor do I understand why the claim to have tree equity or any kind of equity has any basis in moral authority whatsoever. I don't know why it should be when their truth is that it should be and my truth is that it shouldn't be. I bet you if I said to Catherine Marr, okay, Catherine, you know what my truth is? My truth is I could even bring you studies to substantiate that my truth is that human beings are not the primary guilty party in global climate change. That's my truth. Do you accept it over at NPR? You know what my truth is, Catherine? My truth, Catherine Marr, my truth is that Israel has a claim to self-defense based not only on history and international law, but on the notion of justice. Can I get that out on NPR, do you think? Do you think they'd let me do that? My truth is that Israel's actually not committing genocide. Do you think I could get that on NPR? No. No, I could not get that on NPR. Because the people who say truth is relative like she does, they don't mean it. They don't mean it. What they mean is getting things done on their terms. And that truth can get in the way. You bet it can. You bet it can. It can get in the way of setting us free. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Dombrowski brings us our culture and economy update. He is the president and founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, grandcanyonplanning.com, his website. Great place to reach out to him and to see what Grand Canyon Planning might be able to do for you. How are you today, John?
Fantastic, Seth. Thank you.
Good. You betcha. Wall Street Journal did something interesting today. They took major issues in our economy, growth, inflation, interest rates, and they asked a bunch of economists where we are and where we're headed on each of those. I thought it might be fun to kind of run that through your brain, your filter. Growth. Most economists thought the Fed's aggressive campaign to raise interest rates would do far more to slow the economy than it has. Growth has outperformed expectations. What's your thought on this?
Well, we certainly have seen, even though rates have gone up. It did definitely slow the housing market down, but it created this shortage of housing, right, which ultimately created this price increase in housing, which is much, much harder now for the average person out there to purchase a home. You know, it's really interesting when you look at the shopping habits of people.
Yeah.
Have you tried to get into a restaurant as well?
Right,
food?
Right.
You know, even though the cost of food is up, you try to go to a restaurant right now.
People are spending money. I don't know if it's money they have, but they are spending money.
They're spending money. And the more expensive the restaurant, sometimes the harder it is to get in there.
It's interesting.
It's really interesting. Yeah. So even though we're seeing these higher cost, the cost of money is higher. Inflation is still there. We still have seen some reasonable growth. I think, a little bit more growth than many of the economists had expected.
Labor market, you were saying about that, is too. That's part of what you were talking about, too. Job gains have also far exceeded forecasts, right?
And in this, they're asking the questions from these economists, and many of the economists are seeing that people are confident still with their job.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't lost, even though we see these big layoffs that have occurred, still a lot of people are working. There is still a low unemployment rate. There's most of the jobs that were available out there have been being filled. Now, maybe some of that's because of the immigration that we've seen. That's part of something that they talk about in this report as well.
Nice.
And then interest rates, they talk about.
Well, there we go. Inflation. In recent years, neither economists nor investors have seriously doubted that the Fed would succeed in bringing inflation down to its 2% target. The question has been what it would take to get there, right?
Right. And as the Fed was raising rates all along the way, the concern was, are they going to raise it so much that it's going to cause some type of a break in the economy?
Right.
And, well, we did experience a brief break when we saw some of the banks that started to fail, the community banks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was a big concern. Mm-hmm. Now, that was all because of a lot of these banks had very, high holdings in long-term bonds. And as interest rates went up, the value of those bonds went down. And as people started to want their money out of those banks, they had to sell these bonds at such a loss. So, it looks like based on some of the recent stress tests that have been done, maybe that's not necessarily as much of a concern any longer as it was at the time. And it looks like the Fed has stopped raising rates. Maybe they've slowed down their time frame on reducing rates, but it looks like we're probably set at a point to where rates have peaked, at least from the Fed's standpoint.
Yeah, yes. And that transfers to the point of interest rates. Economists have steadily lifted their interest rate forecasts as growth showed little signs of slowing and inflation remained above the Fed's 2%. You were talking about this as well. An exception came in January when they forecast steeper cut rates than they had 3 months earlier, right?
Yeah, and they did. Fed Chair Powell came out and stated basically, we're going to do these rate cuts.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden the brakes hit when the CPI numbers came out and we saw that inflation was creeping up a little bit again.
Yeah.
So, maybe it's pushed out to the end of 2024 or maybe into 2025.
Yeah.
You really don't know. We're going to have to wait to see what the next couple of reports are.
But later than we initially probably thought at the beginning.
Much later. Many people thought there were going to be 6 rate cuts
year.
That's
we
haven't seen one yet.
No.
Right? So I think that certainly has been pushed back, and it may be 1 to 2 cuts this year, if even any.
Yep. Good. Okay. John Dombrowski. Thank you for doing that with us, sir.
You bet. Again, check out our website, grandcanyonplanning.com. You can certainly request an appointment with me right there. Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA SIPC, and an investment advisor. Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC and Creative One Securities LLC are not affiliated.
Thank you, Seth. Are you a golfer, John?
I do like to golf, yes.
Do you like to golf? We're going to invite you to a golf event.
Let's do it.
All right. We have one in mind.
Sounds great.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. What's so funny, Mr. Bill? Oh, I'm sure we'd all like a laugh. Well, now something your teacher said to, I see Mr. Bill laughing over there. Didn't your first and second grade teacher do that when you were
all the time?
Right? When you were cutting up in class.
Would you
or
like
something?
To share the joke with the class, Tommy?
Yeah. Or you're passing a note. I'm sure we'd all like to read what you're passing, right? I don't know where they did they all learn that from their graduate teachers course, from their graduate teachers classes? Why did every teacher know to do that? I'm sure the other one was all wait. You're only wasting your own time. I never understood that argument, because if they were going to wait on us, why should we stop? Well, if it's our own time. What? Oh, Bill, I got you going on something here. What do I got you going on? We'll go to Rob in a second here. When Bill gets animated about something, what do you got? You got something on this?
Yeah, if we have carte blanche, what's the problem?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'll show myself out.
That was a lot of effort for that point.
I like to work smarter, not harder.
Okay, let's go to Rob in surprise. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Seth. I've been away for the past week, but I'm back. And so I had talked to Was it Bill or David who I talked to, come to think of it? I'm not sure.
I don't know. We try and keep the terrorists confused that way.
Oh, I mean, my topic was don't immunize the eschaton.
Yes, sir.
And what it means and how complicated it actually is.
Okay.
When you read more and more about it.
Okay.
I was told that you had a guest on Monday that was talking quite a bit about it. I remember I was reading something from the Witherspoon Institute, which is one of those little known think tanks, I guess, that had it was, I guess, named after John Witherspoon, who was, you know, a signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Presbyterian minister and the teacher of James Madison.
He was like a mentor, I guess, James Madison. And he came from Scotland, of course. So what was the Calvinism, I think, was one of their big things. People, you know, and Mr. Buckley, of course.
Isn't the Witherspoon Institute run by Robert George at Princeton?
I don't know.
I think it might be.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, the first time I'd heard about it was, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, when, of all people, Jonah Goldberg of National Review had actually started talking about it a lot. And, of course, now, Jonah Goldberg, I don't really bother reading anything from him anymore.
It's hard to find where he writes anymore. I mean, he has his own publication, I guess, but you have to pay for it.
Yeah, the idea being, you know, don't try to create heaven on earth, or don't try to create utopia here, because it sort of coincides with the decline of religious faith and the increase in the religion of man as his own God.
Yes,
and of course, what has that brought us? That has brought us where we are today. That has brought us communism. That has brought us fascism.
That is the essence of the meaning of don't immanentize the eschaton. It is the notion of Karl Marx's that you can create heaven on earth, when what every communist entity and enterprise has done is not brought heaven down to earth, but hell up.
Yes, and that also goes back to, and I think it's a very Christian, Jewish, religious thing, because it goes back to the beginning of time with God. You know, we were created good, and then sin came into the picture, and then, you know, from there, everything else followed. And of course, when you start creating a belief in the God or the God of politics, if you will. And I think that's one of the problems the Democrats have, and all those who follow it, they still don't get it. They don't understand that not just can you not create heaven on earth or a utopia, no matter how much money you pour into government programs, you can't equate, you know, in general, Democrats with and this is going to be controversial for me to say, with deep religious Christian or Jewish faith.
Michael, Michael Novak, a Catholic theologian, said that to know oneself is to disbelieve utopia, which is to say utopia, which literally means a place that doesn't exist. That's literally what utopia means.
Yes.
It cannot be created because man being imperfect, how could you ever do such a thing? That's what Novak is getting at, or is driving at with his point, to know oneself is to disbelieve utopia. But that is exactly what the Marxist project was. It was to overcome human nature. What Michael Novak was saying is, recognize, because of human nature, you're never going to have perfection here on earth. That is why we think of a difference between heaven and earth. By the way, interestingly enough, a distinction Karl Marx did not recognize.
Yes. I think when you talk about, you know, don't immanentize the eschaton, people have to recognize, you know, the kingdom of God is the work of God.
Correct.
Number two, we humans are not God.
Correct.
And here and now, I know people talk about, you know, this is the end times because everything is so screwed up. Well, I don't know because it's not our call. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but that's up to God, not us. So we don't know really whether it is, and I wouldn't place too much faith in we are living in the end times, because every time bad things happen throughout human history, people have probably thought that. You know,
it's such an interesting question. Yeah, it's so interesting because on the one hand, we know that we each have our own end time, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We each know that on an individual level, and I know that's not the Armageddon end times you're talking of, but it isn't. It keeps you awake at night if you go too deeply thinking about whether we are in end times or not. In a way, we always are. In a way, we're always in end times, maybe. Or we should think we are.
That's right.
Maybe.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, we're commanded, you know, biblically to do good and avoid evil.
Yep.
But even if we do that, we're still not going to build the kingdom of God in this world, and certainly not by, human power. Because, you know, we're always going to have poor people. We're always going to have sinners. We're always going to have corruption and selfishness and unjust law or unloving and unpeaceful people, because that, again, has to do with human nature, which doesn't change.
Yeah.
And so all of this is really, it's the more you take a dive into the Buckleyan comment, which I think he started from, Eric Voegelin?
Maybe.
I think he had started reading some of Voegelin, who had escaped Nazi Germany back in the 30s.
Yeah.
It ended up, taking...
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Young David, I'm going to ask you to help me with this. Taylor Tomlinson is making her highly anticipated return to Encore Theater at Wynn Las Vegas this weekend, and then with back-to-back shows Friday and Saturday, April 19th through 20th. On the heels of the recent debut of her late-night comedy show After Midnight on CBS and a recent Netflix special, Have It All, Taylor Tomlinson will be performing Taylor Tomlinson live in Las Vegas at the intimate one-of-a-kind venue. Known for her quick wit, carefully honed act-outs, and ruthless appetite for laughs, she is undeniably hilarious. She will be returning in June with another set of back-to-back shows, June 7th and 8th as well, and is a must-watch. And we're doing what, David? We're giving away tickets or something?
We might be. You know, there's a distinct possibility. We'd like to spread the word about this upcoming weekend, but, you know, there may be two tickets in that June showing for some members of our audience.
All right, so stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned. I want to build up some excitations.
Excitations. Is that in the Beach Boys song? Excitations.
Good vibrations.
Yeah, I think excitations. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. That's right.
Beach Boys, Good Vibrations. Used to be a Sunkissed Soda commercial had that song attached to it. Do you know that one?
I feel like Brian Wilson came out with it first.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those. It definitely is. But you should, on the break, look at the Sunkissed commercial. You'll like it.
I will have to.
Yeah. Good Vibrations, Sunkissed commercial. Reminds you of the beach in the summer. Temporary excitations. Who had that phrase? Is that Shakespeare? Temporary excitations. We warn against that here. As much as amanitizing the eschaton, temporary excitations. The kinds of things that everyone goes crazy about for no real durable reason. You know, we focus on the durables. People get all wrapped up in temporary excitations. And I'm not sure who created that phrase, but it's important to have a long and serious view of things. And if you think about what the media is trying to do with us, the constant frenzy I speak of, the freneticism they put us in, it's all based on temporary excitations. Getting you super animated about something for a super short period of time that they will just drop and move on to in a couple of weeks. Like the Robert Hur Report. Whatever happened to the Robert Hur Report? And the whole scandal that Joe Biden is lacking in mental acuity, as reported in the Robert Hur Report, Are we just all good with that now? We're convinced that we don't have a president and commander-in-chief who is addled? We'll be right back, folks. Open lines, too. 602-508-0960. 602-5089-60. Be right back.